If you're struggling to lose weight, you've probably heard about weight loss medications like Wegovy or Zepbound, and you might be wondering if they're right for you. Meet PlushCare, a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. If you qualify, they can safely prescribe you medication from the comfort of your own home. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss. plushcare.com/weightloss.
Hop by with Hudson Withrow here at outkick.com/watch. Just like that, second hour is here.
Just like that.
Chad, how much time and effort did you put into your mock draft? I put way too much time into mine.
I mean, look, I've put a lot of time into reading about the draft, so it's hard to say. Like, there was a lot of thought that went into it before it. If I said that I spent a lot of time when I was asked for the top 10.
So we turned these
in. I didn't spend a ton of time on that because I'd already read a lot about it.
We're going to run through these because we're starting with pick number one. We're going to have Caleb Williams number one to the Chicago Bears, right?
Yep.
Both of us here.
Yep.
So we've got Caleb Williams number one overall. Had I known what I know now about Washington and the calls they're getting, I may not have gone with a pick here. And instead of I would have gone with a trade. But I've got Washington selecting Drake May. Second overall, said this early in the week, I think they go with the one-on-one interviews and the player that they know and the other player having a dream scenario of reportedly the Raiders or the Vikings and playing for those coaches. Do you have Drake May number two?
Yes, I do. Davey, can you please send me the graphic one more time too? I cannot find it in the group text. But yes, I know that I do have Drake May. Washington Commanders number two overall, just like you. We're lining up so far.
Both of us have Jaden Daniels at three overall. I have the Raiders trading up with the Patriots and giving a haul to go after the LSU quarterback who Antonio Pierce
knows
connection. Well. And the Raiders have been linked to the Washington Commanders for the second overall pick. But because I feel like they'll go with Drake May and they've got to go with the quarterback, I think the Raiders trade up and draft Jaden Daniels at three and the Patriots load up on picks and they can trade back some and still potentially end up with a quarterback in this draft. You also have Daniels at three.
Yes, I have the Gerard Mayo era in New England starting with a new quarterback. The Gerard Mayo era, the initial one, we'll link up with the Jaden Daniels era also. So we are the same 1, 2, and 3. You just have a different team picking third.
Here comes another trade. Vikings, they're loading up. Arizona.
You're going 1 through 4 quarterback.
Arizona is open to dealing out. They have a lot of picks, especially in the top 100. They have a lot of picks. They have three in the top 38, I believe. They're going to trade back. And I think Arizona uses those picks to trade back up later in this first round. But I have Minnesota trading up to draft J.J. McCarthy in a quarterback in a system that is a fit for the Shanahan style that also fits with O'Connell, of course, coming from where he did with the Rams, connection there. J.J. McCarthy out of Michigan to Minnesota.
All the reports are that the Cardinals are asking for the mother load to move out of number four because they know it's going to be a quarterback needy team that's going to trade up with them at number four. I don't think they're going to get it. So I've got the Cardinals sticking and picking the obvious choice, Marvin Harrison Jr. at number four to the Cardinals.
So because the Cardinals trade out, Marvin Harrison Jr. is headed to a franchise that needs a wide receiver and also a franchise with a head coach that used to be his enemy. Now his friend, Jim Harbaugh. I have the Chargers drafting Marvin Harrison Jr., fifth overall. And think about that connection, Justin Herbert and Marvin Harrison Jr. in Los Angeles.
Not bad. So I've got my first trade on the board right now. The Vikings aren't going to strike a deal with Arizona. They are going to reach a deal with Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers. And the Harbaugh era is going to start with more picks and more high picks because they're going to move back and get another first-round pick. I've got number five overall, we've got the Vikings, Hutton, same spot for J.J. McCarthy. You've just got him a spot before that. The Vikings trading up to number five and drafting the Michigan quarterback.
think the Vikings will have to make a move. The Giants also linked with J.J. McCarthy. I think they just stick where they are and they pick the next best wide receiver available. And that's, to me, Malik Nabers for what they need. They need speed. They need a explosion on offense. They don't have it right now. They don't have much offensively, period. They've got to get something. Got to get something going. Here's the threat with Malik Nabers at sixth overall. I think that's where he goes. And, Chad, I believe you also agree with wide receiver, based on our quarterbacks that are off the
board.
Yeah,
so, you know, we had Mike Renner on. He had interesting thoughts about the Giants. Crazy enough, what fits best for them right now is a receiver, but it's not maybe the most highly rated receiver on the board. I've got the Giants taking Rome Odunze. The Giants have Jalin Hyatt, who is that just straight speed guy. Explosive option. They drafted a year ago. I think they go with the bigger, I'm not going to say more well-rounded receiver because I think Malik Nabers could be all those things too. But I'm starting to buy into the reports and Mike Renner and other people saying Rome Odunze probably fits better with the Giants than even Malik Nabers. So I've got a bit of a surprise, but I've got Odunze going ahead of Nabers to the Giants at number six.
This sets up perfectly for the Tennessee Titans.
It's kind of chalk for the Titans,
yeah,
for both of us.
Joe Alt is the no-brainer here, given the fact that the Titans were 31st in the league in sacks allowed on drop-back passes. It was like 11% of dropbacks resulted in a sack for Titans quarterbacks in 2023. The offensive line, it's improved already with Cushenberry at center. They have to get better now at left tackle, and you pair Joe Alt, Chad, with Bill Callahan as the offensive line coach.
Yeah, one of the great offensive
it's
line
simple,
coaches.
Right? Is this a layup
in the
for
history
them?
Of the game? Yeah, it's a layup. Joe Alt, my guy for the Titans at 7-2. If he's there, they're taking him, unless the Titans are trading back. I don't think they are. I think they're going to stick and pick the offensive tackle.
If every analyst and all of the former coaches and scouts are correct and that Joe Alt is the best offensive tackle in this draft of a draft that is – I mean, full of them, especially high. Him being available at 7 is a godsend for a franchise that needs the franchise left tackle. At number 8, another trade for me. I have the Jets trading up ahead, just two spots, just ahead of Chicago for fear that the Bears want this guy. Rome Odunze, the Jets, they need to get talent on the outside, load up with Aaron Rodgers. Rome Odunze still available. I take Rome Odunze over Brock Bowers in the top 10, and I just jump up ahead of Chicago for fear that the Bears would go wide out and pair him with a solid core at wide receiver. The Jets need that. They get that in Odunze.
I'm going to get weird with my 8th overall pick. I have got the Buffalo Bills trading up from 28
This would be 8. Atlanta, by the way.
This is the Atlanta spot. I've got the Bills trading up 28-8 with Atlanta, giving up a ton because they believe Malik Nabers is a guy that can win them a Super Bowl with Josh Allen. They got to replace Stephon Diggs. They're going to love this receiver class. If they can get one of these top three, and Nabers in my mock falling to 8, they're going to give up a ton to go up and get him. I've got the Bills doing that with the Falcons. Far-fetched, yes, but we've seen crazier things on draft night happened before. I've got the Bills trading all the way up to 8 and drafting Malik Nabers.
There is some talk that Atlanta would take the receiver, if you could believe that. That would make 4 or 5 straight drafts where they would have picked a skill position in the top 10.
That's crazy.
It's nuts. So Chicago not having the receiver available, I have them going with the best defensive player on the board. And I think Atlanta flips back to 10. Knowing that they're happy with either guy because it fits what they need up front, they take the next best player. Byron Murphy to the Chicago Bears. Help on the interior. Teams are loading up and investing on the interior defensive line with salaries. They get the Grizzly Bear on the interior in Chicago. Byron Murphy out of Texas, 9th overall.
I, too, have the first defensive guy coming off the board, but my top guy is Dallas Turner, edge out of Alabama. I've got Turner going 9th to the Bears.
I have, right after this pick, I have Dallas Turner, 10th overall to Atlanta. If you need somebody that's going to be a walkout stand-up linebacker on the outside, rush the passer, I can play the edge for you, this is your guy. Some have him as the best defensive player on the board, and the best defensive player would go 10th. This is great for Atlanta, who would get something in return from New York as well, just for flipping back and taking either Murphy or Turner at 10.
The Jets are going to do something to give Aaron Rodgers a toy, something where a reporter maybe could say, what are you going to do with that if Greg Doyle was there? That's what they'd say about this player. That would be Brock Bowers in this scenario, and he is a special toy. He is terrific, and this is a great move for the Jets.
He's going to write a column about you calling him a toy now.
Yes, exactly.
How dare you get sexual with Brock Bowers?
Aaron Rodgers says, you know, this guy's he's a new friend of mine. He's my thing. He's my toy.
My manager.
He's a little bit of everything. That's what Brock Bowers could be to this Jets offense, Hutton.
It makes sense,
a
man.
Little bit of everything for Aaron Rodgers, and that's where they're going to go at number 10.
Would you rather have Adunze or Neighbors or Brock Bowers? Would you trade up a couple spots
I'd rather have Neighbors, personally.
Okay.
If I'm the Jets, you're saying?
Yeah.
Just specifically?
Yeah, at 10. Would you trade up two spots to go after a wide receiver in my scenario? And again, I'm just thinking they're trying to...
You know, they've got good young wide receiver play already, and Brock Bowers is basically like a big slot. You know, he's a receiver, you know, for all intents and purposes. Yep. So I'd be good with any of those three.
Have you heard that you mentioned earlier, I believe you were telling me, and maybe we can bring this up with David Shaw, Denver for Michael Penix Jr.?
I like that idea. We'll have to ask David Shaw about that.
But I'm saying, like, have you read that there's a connection? Because
I'm just speculating.
Could we have five quarterbacks in the top 15?
Yeah, I'm speculating of who. I think someone's going to get a steal when they get Michael Penix Jr., wherever he is outside the top four of those quarterbacks.
And, I mean, if what we've been saying all year, I mean, he's more of the pocket presence. So he's going to fit certain offenses, not every offense. But I invest in him, and I'd be willing to trade back if I'm getting something big in return, a haul, and load up with him. If I'm in a position where I've got skill position loaded up, Minnesota. But Minnesota wants the J.J. McCarthy style.
Yep.
Dan Z joins us with a column available right now at outkick.com. Chad, we read through this morning, and we discussed this with Clay Travis about the Sweet 16 coaches and Dan Z reaching out to each of them.
Yeah, and I like how Dan phrased it in a post I saw that, you know, people were all over him for, oh, you only asked these two coaches that. Why not ask more? And he said, well, I asked the Sweet 16 the question. And, Dan, what strikes me about this is I completely disagree with Dawn Staley and her opinion on it, but at least Dawn Staley answered the question, which is more than can be said for these other coaches that you reached out to and tried to get a comment from and asked this legitimate question.
Yeah, guys, it's interesting, and here's what I think I've learned, which is all the people who came at me and said, you know, the national championship, prior to the national championship, that wasn't the right time and place. Well, here's what you get when you don't get to ask them face-to-face. They can simply decline to comment. They're not put on the spot. So when is the right time? Because quite honestly, I'm not even convinced that many of these SIDs that I contacted who possibly responded or didn't respond ever even asked these coaches the question in the first place.
You're right.
I honestly think a lot of these athletic departments were like, we're not even passing this along. We're just going to decline, move on. No good can come from asking coach, whether he or she says they're for it, against it. There's going to be hate coming their way. So, you know, we're just going to decline. I honestly can't even tell you how many coaches this actually got put in front of. I don't know.
And Dan, just thinking about the opportunity for, you know, the big voices of the sport to step up and say something. Of course, you gave Dawn Staley that platform. But this is the next opportunity, given the options that you had to go through. And Ken Mulkey did not participate. Gino Auriemma, Tara Vanderveer. We saw the names in the list there. But the names that come to mind and the recognition of women's college basketball, it could end with them if they are the collective voice of this issue that seems pretty cut and dry.
Yeah, so this is another thing that I found interesting was, you know, look, there's a list of criticisms I could give you that people sent, but there were some that I paid attention to, and as you mentioned, one of them was you didn't ask enough coaches, and I thought, well, that's reasonable and fair, so I'm going to do that. Another one was, well, why are you even asking the coaches? They aren't the decision makers. They aren't the ones at the NCAA. And I reject that, because if Dawn Staley had come out on the other side and Lisa Bluter had come out with a strong statement, that puts pressure on the decision makers, because they listen to people like this. If Gino Auriemma came out and said, I'm totally against this, this should not be part of our game, you think decision makers at the NCAA wouldn't take that into account, that that wouldn't play a role in actually changing policy? Sure. But it absolutely would.
And think about it from the attention given to the women's Final Four. It doesn't even have to be about women's college basketball, just women's athletics, right? They can be, I mean, we're talking to the Nick Sabans of women's sports, really. If you think about the names and the attention given and the eyeballs on the product at that time.
Absolutely. And that's why we asked them. And that's why I made sure to try and include everyone. I had to cut it off somewhere. Email all 360 Division I schools, but I thought, well, Sweet 16, you know, that's sort of that's a good benchmarker, good barometer for the top coaches generally are in that group. And as you mentioned, the names we've talked about, all big names. And yeah, it was disappointing. I mean, not surprising, of course, but right. It is disappointing to get just a, yeah, nah, we're not touching this issue.
I honestly don't understand why they're afraid to just, you know, you could have a well thought out written statement saying, you know, hey, you could even mince words however you wanted about where you stand on rights for all people, but also Title IX and women's sports. This is something I defend all, and, you know, women should play against you, however you want to say it, right? A buzz phrase that I hear all the time, Dan, is, well, I don't want to be on the wrong side of history. I think we heard it today from Megan Rapinoe in a story that's up at Outkick, right? The NCAA will be on the wrong side of history if they say that transgender women can't compete against biological women. You don't want to be on the wrong side of history. What do you make of that phrase when you hear it? And also the fear of people just to say something we've said a while that, quite frankly, not many people disagree with.
I think it's hilarious and ironic that they're using it in this context, because I can't imagine that in 100 years that people will look back at this and go, yeah, those people who thought women's sports were for women, man, were they wrong. Ooh, wow, yeah. Are they on the wrong side of history? I mean, look, I understand that times change and there are things that we think now that maybe people 100 years ago never would have, and it seems obvious, but there's just no world you can envision where this issue turns to the point where people are like, yeah, well, I can't believe we even had a debate about that. And to your question, which I thought was interesting, was, yeah, Dawn Staley was kind of put on the spot a bit and she kind of had to just roll with it. Everyone else has had time. And that was part of this story, guys. We reached out on Monday afternoon. I gave everyone 48 hours, which is quite a lot of time in this business, really. I mean, generally, if you've ever been asked for a comment, especially on a piece where, you know, you might feel like it's going to be a quote unquote, a hit piece or a gotcha, you know, they might give you a couple hours to respond. We gave people 2 days and got a couple of responses that were like, well, he or she is recruiting. They're very busy. To write down a response to one question, you don't have 10 minutes, 15 minutes to craft a, as you said, sort of a politically correct statement that maybe takes a stand, but also supports it. Like, it was very doable, very doable. And we gave them every opportunity to do so, and they chose not to. So, I mean, that's where we are.
Mulkey would have held a press conference mentioning you had it been a hit piece, you know?
Yeah. That's true. Good point.
Out in front of it. Dan Z with us, Outkick.com contributor. Two-part question here. First, take us through, if you can, the credential request system for the WNBA.
I don't have a ton of experience with this. It wasn't me that requested a credential for the draft. I have requested a credential. So Caitlin Clark's first WNBA game is going to be in Connecticut, which is where I live. It's down at the casino. So I did apply for a credential for her first game in Connecticut. I haven't heard anything yet. That was about a week ago. It was like any other standard credential process. Yeah. You go through an internet portal and they ask you who you work for and what you're planning to do. There was an interesting question there, though, that I've never seen on a credential request before, which was something along the lines of, how do you plan to cover this team? Or Which I've never seen that before.
I wonder how Greg Doyle answered that question.
Yeah, you could have answered, I plan to cover it better than Greg Doyle. I wonder if they would have accepted that reply.
So I love this. I mean, I'm not trying to have you on the WNBA beat here, but I do think we should
request. Too late.
I think Outkick should request a credential for literally anything.
I mean, you asked a question respectfully,
yeah,
and said it, I mean, well, and it was a quote unquote controversial question, but you handled it with professionalism, and Don Staley wasn't mad about it. Meanwhile, Greg Doyle is stealing the show at Caitlin Clark's introductory press conference
and apologizing. To my knowledge, crazy. He hasn't had his credential pulled.
No, and. You know, quite honestly, if I were him, I wouldn't have apologized, to be honest with you, because, look, it was dumb, and I wrote about it because I thought it was just silly and him trying too hard. It was weird, and it was a bit unprofessional.
But he apologized because he doesn't want to be on the wrong side of history.
Or the wrong side of Caitlin Clark.
Like, he basically said that in his pod.
He doesn't want to be the wrong side of Caitlin Clark.
I'm finally that guy that I hate. I've hated for so long, is what he said.
He doesn't want to be the wrong side of that.
Yeah, I'm now on the wrong side of everything.
It was, please don't revoke my credential, right? Because he's seen what happened with us and us getting denied. And then, you know, of course, they claimed that we missed the deadline, which was true. But we also had plenty of information that other people missed the deadline. And
sure.
Somehow theirs magically made its way through.
I mean, how many times have we seen a credential where it's the space for the name is not, it's not printed, it's blank, and they just write it on there
Sharpies.
As an extra. They have all kinds of stuff. And you better believe they welcome all coverage as long as you answer that question right, Dan.
And by the way, I missed the deadline for both events that I covered, both the Final Four and the Sweet 16 in Albany, and had no problem getting a credential after that. I mean, I might have a problem now, but before asking the question, I didn't have any trouble getting in because, yeah, like you said, I mean, and I've even pitched to them, look, you know, the Outkick audience isn't exactly the biggest women's basketball audience on the planet, but isn't that the goal here? To reach a new audience, to bring new people in? And this, for our audience, is something our audience cares about.
Well, but also, I mean, I also said last week, Dan, the idea that you're the only one that could be credentialed to ask the question is ridiculous. What was the reaction after the presser or whatever from other media members and the idea that they can't ask the same type of question that is relevant?
Well, there were a couple things. I was sitting in the media workroom and there was a group of people to my left and they just started openly talking about me, not realizing I was sitting right there. So I just said, hey guys, I'm sitting right here. So if you'd like to, you know, discuss this, and they just got quiet. I mean, I felt it. I felt it in the room. I mean, and again, what's so funny about it is, like, I've got these people literally tweeting about me that are sitting 20 feet away. And I'm like, you could ask. Again, these are reporters, right? If you want to know why I asked or what my plan was or whatever, you could just ask. But yeah, I mean, how many interviews has Don Staley done since then and no one's asked a follow-up? Not one more follow-up on that. Like, it clearly created national news. Like, we can debate the relevancy of the question at the time, whatever, but it created national news. You're not going to find... If you type in Don Staley transgender on Google, you're going to get hits from ABC, NBC, Fox, like across the spectrum. National news, not one follow-up.
Yep. And if Caitlin Clark wanted to voice her opinion on it, she can do whatever she wants. It would be something that you would be credentialed for automatically.
Yeah.
They bow down to...
Meanwhile, Gail King's interviewing Don Staley and saying she rooted for Caitlin Clark in Iowa.
There you go.
Right to her face.
Yeah, I mean,
I was rooting for him.
How do you plan to cover? We're covering Caitlin Clark, like everyone else.
That's what I wrote.
Plus asking any question we want to as credentialed media members.
Dan, it was a valiant effort. It was a valiant effort by you to try to get some answers, but no one wants to talk about it.
Good digging, man.
Just doing my job, as I keep trying to tell everyone wants to argue with me.
What's your big surprise tomorrow in the draft? Anything?
I don't know. I've been so busy in this world, I haven't had as much time to dig into the draft. I mean, I'm actually kind of excited. I get to watch it a little bit more from a let's see what happens. I mean, three is where we're looking, right? Like, three is going to determine this draft.
Yep.
But it's hard after last year to make any I mean, who had Houston making a pick at two and then trading up to pick again at three, and it changed the entire course of the draft. So every mock draft at that point was dead.
Yep.
Dead.
And
no one knew what was going to happen.
And all of the discussion about CJ Stroud and what it ultimately meant, nothing. He still went second. Everyone knew Carolina was taking Bryce Young, still went second overall, ends up winning rookie of the year. I mean, it's...
Yeah, so the question is...
We don't know what to believe.
is Drake May CJ Stroud, or is he Will Levis? Like, that's a question that I'm interested in seeing. Is it, you know, because he was the guy for a while, and then as the draft process wore on, he started slipping down in the reports. And I don't know, is that all smoke and mirrors, that someone's going to trade up with the Patriots for three and take Drake May, and all of that will have been for naught? Or is he going to be Will Levis, where we thought maybe he was a top five pick, and then suddenly you look around and day two, he's still on the board. So Drake May is going to be interesting. I mean, McCarthy is super interesting in that, again, are these reports that he's now suddenly coveted in the top five, are they real? Are teams trying to create some subterfuge because, you know, they want, I mean, Harbaugh's out there promoting him. Like, of course Harbaugh's promoting him. That teams pick ahead of them. He wants McCarthy off the board because it's a player he knows he's not going to take. It's great. Take him off the board.
Dan Z has been our guest. You can check out his work, outkick.com, including the basketball coaches who are dodging the NCAA transgender issue and discussion. Dan, thank you, man.
Thanks, guys.
The other, he brought up Will Levis. The Will Levis is J.J. McCarthy with the discussion last minute, like the, all the push. And I wonder, C.J. Stroud, Drake May is the, he was right there with Caleb Williams, like C.J. was a year ago. I still
some,
think
some guys
too.
That we might talk to David Shaw about.
Yeah, David Shaw is about to join us as he checks in right now. The former Stanford coach, he'll be a part of NFL Network's draft coverage. He's next here on Hot Mic.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Top Mike with Huddy Withrow on the Outkick Network, streaming at outkick.com/watch. Chad, our guest joining us, former Stanford head coach, a name that you and I bring up whenever we mention commissioner of college football.
Yeah.
Now with NFL Network doing great things with the NFL draft coverage, which, of course, they will have live coming up on Thursday and then throughout the weekend. David Shaw joins us here on the program. Coach, good to be on with you, man. Thanks for joining us.
Hey, my pleasure. Happy to talk to you guys.
The lion in the background of this. Explain the reason for it. There's got to be an alpha quality to this.
Yeah, well, I'm in my car, so it's either looking through my back window or the lion. It's the only one I had left, and I had it left over from COVID, where I had probably 30 backgrounds, but I'm a Leo. I loved having the lion, so I always kept it, and it just came in handy.
There we go.
I love it. Hutton had mentioned you're a name that comes up with us for commissioner of college football. My question is, would the Pac-12 still exist if you were the commissioner of the Pac-12 instead of George Kliavikoff when all that went down?
You know, I don't want to blame anybody because it was a series of ridiculous mistakes by a lot of different people that led to the dissolving of the Pac-12. I believe if there were few of us, if we were more involved in the process, especially starting back about 3 years ago, that we probably could have found a way. And it's more than just the commissioner. It's university presidents that really, I think, had a chance, but made some wrong steps along the way and led USC and UCLA to decisions that I don't blame them for anymore. I did at the time, but now I get it. The amount of money that we were passing up, and the amount of money that they could have made, they had to jump ship, but the other 10 stayed together until they absolutely could not. So I don't want to just blame George. It was just a series of ridiculous, terrible mistakes that led to the dissolution of my, one of my favorite entities, which was the Pac-12 Conference.
You know what we're saying, or whenever I say commissioner of college football here, instead of the commissioner of the SEC or the Big Ten, the czar. When you hear your name and that, what do you think?
I mean, it's really kind of special that people would even think of me that way. And that's what's part of my goal, is to do things all the time since I was young, to do things that make my parents proud. You know, that's what I'm always trying to do, try to appreciate the way that I was raised, faith-based, reason for making decisions, doing things that are right for people, and creating environments that are positive. So I really appreciate that. And I think that's awesome. but no way in hell would I touch this ridiculous mess that everybody has to deal with right now.
It does feel like you got out the right time, Coach, when you look at the state of college football right now. And you were around football and coaching and mentorship your whole life. You talked about your parents. Your dad, Willie Shaw, longtime coach. Is it something you knew? You talked about wanting to make your parents proud. Was part of that getting into coaching to make them proud, or was it your father's influence that led you to coaching ultimately?
Absolutely, my father's influence. We had such a great time as kids, going to training camp, throwing the ball around, getting to know some of the football players back when he was coaching at Arizona State when I was a little kid, and getting to know Michael Richardson, Eric Allen, just some great players, and then going to the Lions, getting to know some of those guys when I was a kid. So just being around it. I initially did not want to coach. I mean, all the way through graduation, I was going to do something else. I was going to do asset allocation. I was going to get into the financial world. But I got a phone call and I said, well, let me just try this thing out for a year. And the year has ended up being, you know, almost 30. I loved every minute of it. I did get out at the right time. I don't bash people for staying in it who love it. I think the way that I did what I did at Stanford was not going to be possible going forward, especially with the previous administration. But Stanford has a new president, new provost, new direction, and new people around the program. So hopefully they can get involved in the NIL space, which is vital. Hopefully they can utilize the transfer portal more so than we have in the past. So hopefully they can rebuild that program.
It's clear you want to continue coaching. You've interviewed for a handful of jobs across the league, including the Broncos twice. I know the Titans reached out to you. How close do you feel like you are to landing an NFL job?
That's a great question. And one I can't answer because it's all about who's making the hire. There are some people that would never hire me and some people that would. So I think it's for me to make sure I make the next best decision. I may still do something in the NFL, whether it's coaching or not. I may continue to do TV, especially leaning on the NFL side. I mean, I do want to get in the NFL world and stay in the NFL world. I've done, you know, gosh, 11 plus years of NFL Network drafts. Some people like the way I evaluate, so it could be something in personnel. So I'm open to a lot of different things. As I said, I'm not excited to get back into college football anytime soon. It just doesn't suit me. It suits other people. I'm open to different jobs in the NFL, but I do believe I have the skill set. I have the mentality. I have the background to be a good NFL coach.
David Shaw with us. Who is the best overall football player in this draft?
Yeah, that's a tough one for me. There are about five guys at the top, but I can't convince myself that anybody's better than Caleb Williams. Everything that he's done, and there are some bad film, there's some bad plays on this year's draft, but I still this year's college football season, but I still understand what this young man was going through. They didn't have what they had last year, and when you're the best player, sometimes you do. You try to do more than you should. And I saw that. I saw that he felt like he had to bring the team up. But you watch all the games this year, last year, when he took over as a true freshman at Oklahoma, the talent is special. You talk to his teammates. There's no arrogance. There's no brashness. They love him. They follow him. He's just a good kid. Now, there's a lot of stuff around him. There are a lot of things that people want to point to. Look at his fingernails. Look at all these things. When you're an NFL coach, you don't care. Will this guy step on the field, be a field general, make the plays that we want to teach him to make, but then also make the plays that no one else can make, and he can do both of those. So he's the best player, and I can't hesitate when I say that. There's other guys that are close that are really good, but there's nobody better.
And when you're a coach or GM, and you're way more film dependent on everyone in the draft, you're going to watch them play football and evaluate them playing football. I am curious, though, Coach, is there a sliding scale on how you evaluate the quarterback position in terms of personality fit, leadership, off-field, everything else? Because it does seem like the one position where all those things matter, maybe more than others.
Yeah, you do that for all positions to a certain degree. You want to make sure they have proper character that you're looking for, somebody who's not getting in trouble all the time, someone that actually listens when you coach, right? You look at those things. But absolutely, the quarterback, there's so much more because there's more put on him. You know, is he a quick learner? Or does it take him a while to understand concepts? Because in the NFL, you can have three really good games, and your fourth game, if you do the same thing, you will not have a good game. You have to be able to add to your scheme, tweak your scheme, make adjustments. And the quarterback's got to get it early in the week. He's got to figure it out the first day you put it in, and then you get reps on it and be ready to execute. So the quarterback's acumen, the quarterback's personality, you have a bunch of different personalities, but as long as that personality can fit within the construct of a team. Some personality is very standoffish, but once the game starts, the quarterback is the coach's voice on the field, and you want to make sure that they fit. So, his personality matters, his acumen matters, his ability to lead on the field matters. I mean, there's only a few teams that don't huddle. The rest of them in the NFL, they huddle. And I always say this to quarterbacks, when you're a huddle team, like most NFL teams are, you got to step in the huddle like you own it. You got to step in the huddle and spit the play out like you know it. And you got to say it with confidence, because the way that you say it, those guys believe it or they don't believe it. So if you have to have all those three when you're calling plays in the huddle. I believe Caleb has that, but that's part of what happens after the college season is done, after the NFL season is done, when you go through the combine and you go through the visits and you go through all the every former coaches, everything. You want to find out that coach, that quarterback has all those things you're looking for.
You coach with Jim Harbaugh. Jim Harbaugh coached J.J. McCarthy. J.J. McCarthy won a national title with Jim Harbaugh. I've seen some comps that say J.J. McCarthy is Jim Harbaugh as a quarterback in Jim Harbaugh's time in the NFL. What do you see when you turn on the tape and watch J.J. McCarthy?
Well, first of all, I do something that is not necessarily popular. I never give any position credit for winning a national championship. You know, I that sometimes it raises players above what their capabilities are, right? For years at Georgia, like, I didn't care. When you're an evaluator, you're just looking at the film. And when you look at JJ's film, you wish he threw the ball more, et cetera. But what I see, I really like. I love his footwork. I love the accuracy. There are times where he's got to make, he hasn't thrown the ball in about five or six plays because he ran the ball. And he's got to step up on a third and seven to make a big time throw. And he steps up and he makes it. There are times where he has to scramble and use his legs. He'll get you first downs. He'll scramble and make a guy miss in the open field and get down and protect himself. He'll roll to his left when he has to and make a great body throw, a throw that NFL guys can make. And so, like I said, like all guys started when they watched this thing, they say, gosh, you know, I wish there were more throws. I wish they leaned on him more. But when you just watch the film and you just watch the throws and you look at the situations, this kid's impressive.
Coach, Chad mentioned Harbaugh. So when the Chargers go on the clock, you're there. Are you going to say, let's say Alt is available or one of the three receivers, Harbaugh, does he go wide receiver or tackle?
Boy, that's a good question. That's a really good question, and one that might affect the Tennessee Titans.
Yep.
Joe Ortiz is the GM. We spent some time together in Baltimore, and everybody that's been in Baltimore knows the starting of the franchise in Baltimore was drafting Jonathan Ogden, right? It was setting the tone, setting the tempo that we're going to draft the best tackle in the draft and build the line and be physical. So I would not be surprised if they draft Alt. So I have a serious dilemma because that quarterback is special and he needs a special receiver. And one of those top three guys, if they're there, I would have a hard time passing him unless I was passing him for the top tight end in the draft. And I would think about that. So to me, those are the three things. If your top receiver's there, for me, it would take a hard to pass that guy up. I would love to draft the tight end, but I do know what they're building mentality-wise, attitude-wise. So yeah, drafting Alt, who's a special tackle and a special guy, and one that you know is not going to falter. If he's there, it'd be hard to pass him up.
So we're going to see Brock Bowers in the top 10 tomorrow night?
Is he top 10 worthy? Absolutely. I don't know that you do see him in the top 10. He might be at number 10.
Okay.
Because if I'm Aaron Rodgers, I'm just kind of tiptoeing around the building saying, hey, you know what? That tight end looks pretty good for us, doesn't he? Mm-hmm. You know, I've got some receivers. They need help on the offensive line. But Aaron Rodgers, if he can stay healthy, that is a definite playoff team. And if you give him another guy that can work inside, and this tight end is special inside, I think he could make them even more of a contender. You see what the tight end position has done for Detroit, for San Francisco, for Kansas City. And I think you give Aaron Rodgers that weapon inside, that could be special. So I think the Jets are a viable option to take the superstar tight end, Brock Bowers.
Coach, you said something that jumped out to me, the identity picks. Certain franchises drafting a guy, and immediately you think, oh, that makes sense for that franchise. The Pittsburgh Steelers come to mind. When they draft someone, you can see Mike Tomlin in that draft pick. You coached in Baltimore. Same thing. Ravens draft someone. Oh, that makes sense for the Ravens. I would say that about you at Stanford. That's a Stanford guy when you watch them. That looks like a Stanford offensive lineman, or you name the position. Do you expect to see that with Jim Harbaugh and the Chargers a year or two from now, or five? Do you think we're going to be saying, oh, that's a Chargers Harbaugh guy? Is that what they're trying to build with that franchise?
That's why I think there's a possibility of them taking Alt. I think that would set the mentality and attitude for the team. And I know that's how Jim works, knowing Joe Ortiz. And it's Joe's pick. I mean, Joe's going to talk to everybody. It's going to be collaborative with the ownership and management and coaches. But I would not be surprised if that was a mentality pick. Like, hey, this is what we're doing. We're going to protect our quarterback with this tackle for the next 12 to 14 years. And that's our mentality and attitude. I love the second round wide receivers. So they could be saying, hey, you know what? We can get a top flight receiver in the second round. This is a mentality attitude pick. This is a franchise pick. You know, let's protect the quarterback's left side for the next decade.
A lot of discussion and chatter every year, but specifically today going into tomorrow about Jaden Daniels, whether or not the Raiders are calling or the Vikings trying to move up potentially because they have targeted him. Jaden Daniels, coach, he took his game to another level when he transferred. He was decisive. His leadership qualities were improved. His body language stood out. What qualities does he possess outside of just being the Heisman Trophy winner that would make teams clamor to move up and give up future picks in order to have him on the roster?
Yeah, so this kid's always been talented. We faced him when he was at Arizona State, and they beat us, and we didn't have an answer for him. He had a big-time throw on a third down where we almost got to him. He had a big-time run on a third down where I think he has probably a 25, 30-yard scramble. His athleticism, but you said the word for me that is the big change between Arizona State and him being the Heisman Trophy winner at LSU, and that's decisiveness. I mean, he makes quick decisions. The ball comes out really quick. He's throwing the ball accurately. He's moving in the pocket. He's escaping the pocket. He does a lot of those things that coaches love because they get us out of trouble. You know, we hate a quarterback that we have to call the perfect game.
Yeah.
You don't have to call the perfect game with Jaden Daniels. He'll throw the ball accurately away from defenders. When everybody's covered and it should be a sack, he'll turn it into a 10, 15, 20-yard gain. That's what you see. And what I see with quarterbacks that I think the top two, Caleb and Jaden, have are the qualities that make the coordinator's job easier. They get out of trouble. They make bad plays into good plays, or they turn 0-yard gains into positive plays. And that's why I think these two guys are going high in the first round.
What am I missing on Michael Penix Jr. as to why he's not being mentioned with those top four quarterbacks or being in the mix with those guys?
I think Michael Penix agrees with you. He just sent a letter a couple days ago to all the GMs saying, hey, I've proven myself. I've stayed healthy for 2 years. I keep hearing all these things, you know, haven't I proven it to you? So I think I'm in your boat, right? Unless I'm a coach, unless the GM walks down to my office and says, hey, medically, he's off our board. if they don't say that to me, I have him up there with the top guys. Is he perfect? Absolutely not. He showed he can run in the 4-5. People say he throws a fastball only. I've had those guys before, and you can teach them how to have touch. I know how to do it, keeping their elbow up, you know, finishing their far pocket to get the ball to come up and down, how to throw with proper trajectory. I can teach that. I can't teach a guy to throw 50-yard bombs and hit guys in stride, which is what he does on a regular basis. So for me, he's up there with the top four guys. I think he's really, really good. I would not be surprised at all if he goes ahead of one of those guys that everybody's praising, or someone trades up somewhere in the first round to come get him, because every time I put on the film, and I have multiple times because I hear somebody say that he's a second rounder, I put the film back on again, and it's hard for me to sit down. Every game he throws three or four balls that maybe one or two guys, those top two guys in the first round, can throw. So I think somebody's going to get this young man, and they're going to be really happy.
If I told you it was the Broncos that drafted him and Sean Payton, what would your reaction be?
I wouldn't be surprised. I don't know that he's on their board. Sean, I think, has got a very specific thing he's looking for. But this guy, I mean, he could operate a West Coast offense. A couple things he needs to learn, right, to throw the ball down the middle of the field, you know, with a little bit more trajectory, a little bit more of a bow than a straight line. But I think he could operate that offense. I wouldn't be surprised if the teams that want to be run and play action, that would be, I think, ideal for him. To run the ball and have him pull the ball out and drop back and throw the ball 45 yards, because he can do it on a dime.
You're with an NFL team at this moment. Well, how much discussion or how much debate is there with you and in the room about Drake May versus the other top guys not named Caleb Williams?
I have Drake May third behind those top two guys, and really close to JJ. I'm really close to JJ. Unlike those top two guys, There are some things you question, you know, there's some decision-making, some accuracy. Is the talent there? Absolutely. You go back and watch last year's film, which is a little bit better than this year, I think, and you see it all. This is a big, strong, athletic quarterback, great mentality, great personality. He's a leader. He is a field general. I think he'll be a very good NFL pro. Some things with him you got to work on as well, but because none of those guys come out perfect from college. But I think he's definitely in the conversation, in the top 10 for sure. Most likely the top 4 or 5 if somebody trades up to get him. But he has all the tools, and he looks like walking in the door. He looks like what you're looking for in an NFL quarterback.
Coach, always a great conversation with you. Thank you for the time. When's the last time you spoke with Andrew Luck?
We texted last week. He was doing some traveling. He was out of town. We spoke probably a month and a half ago. We always check in. Actually, I'll be checking in with him this weekend. But yeah, we keep in touch regularly.
Does he give you any good book recommendations or anything from his book club?
Is the book club still a thing?
Way too many book recommendations. I can't keep up. Yeah, I can't keep up. He's a special young man. He's got a high intellect, and he loves to read and has the capacity to consume books at a higher rate than I do.
I mean, Chad and I we tuned in a little bit to the book club back in the day, and it was fascinating where his mind goes.
Dude, he is not just a football guy.
No.
That is for sure with Andrew Luck.
I'm guessing the conversation on the text was not about football.
Oh, absolutely not. Absolutely not. Well, periodically, but mostly we talk about other things, our families, and his dad's busy into little things. He gives me an idea what his dad's doing, and we talk about a lot of different things. Every once in a while, we'll touch on football. But as you said, he has many more things that he's doing. He finished his grad work. He's got an upper graduate degree as well. So he has a lot of varied interests.
The coach and the Leo, David Shaw, has been our guest. Draft coverage coming up on NFL Network. How many hours, how much coverage are you a part of? Do you know?
So first AM, the pre-draft show on the West Coast is 1 to 4 p.m.
Okay.
And so we got 3 hours on Thursday, and I believe it's 2 hours before the show starts on Friday.
Rest up, man. It's going to be a long weekend, but a fun one.
We'll be watching.
Appreciate it, guys. Thank you.
Yep, there's David Shaw. Chad, he liked the idea of being mentioned for Commissioner of College Football. I don't blame him for wanting to turn that idea down. It's like the president of the NCAA. I don't know why anyone would accept that gig.
I do believe that if he was commissioner of Pac-12, it would still exist.
Yes.
Knowing him and having listened to him, I think he would have kept it afloat.
I think many could have, you know?
Especially but him.
Here we are. No doubt. Great guy. Great show today.
Fun show.
Thanks to all the guests for joining us. Hope you'll join us tomorrow, of course, 4 p.m. Eastern. But also, we have the draft show, the draft watch party coming up here at Outkick. Clay Travis will join us. We start at 8 p.m. Eastern, and it's going to be a blast. We'll react with you. You can join us in the chat on YouTube or at Outkick.com, Facebook, X, across the streaming platforms, Chad, as we like to say. But Chad will be back in the chat. He's excited about this.
The chat has been ready for me to return. I speak to the chat. The chat speaks to me, and I'll be speaking through the chat tomorrow night.
We will chat with all of you tomorrow, 4 p.m. Eastern, right here. Rob, my with Heather Withrow across the Outkick Network.